So we're still even in the middle of Perek Gimel, although we're not doing it pasuk. We were looking at the series. The end of Perek Gimel rhetorically expresses a number of don'ts. Don't be this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And we looked last week at the two psukim. Actually, we looked at three psukim. Chuk Zayin, Perek Gimel, chapter 3, verse 27. That's the where we were talking about, Al Timna Tov Mi Ba'olav, do not withhold good from the rightful owner. Bios La'el, that means power. Yadcha La'sos, when you have the power to do things. So last week, without repeating everything, last week we said that the main point of this pasuk generally is emphasizing the mussar of looking at life as a very precious commodity. We don't live forever, and therefore one needs to take advantage of every moment that one has. Don't withhold. And it's interesting, who is the Ba'olav? It's an interesting point here. Do not withhold good from the owner when you have the power to do it. Who is the owner? Now again, there is a literal pshat, and then there's the more of the mussar. The literal pshat is, the Rishonim say, that this pasuk is simply referring to a person who owes money. When you owe money to a malva, and the malva is asking you for the money, so you keep on saying, you know, the check is in the mail, come back tomorrow, etc. So the simple idea is, you know, when you're able to pay, you should pay. Don't push people off. That's the simple pshat. The deeper meaning is Ba'olav is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning to say, we all owe Chiyuvim to Hashem. We shouldn't push things off to the next day, because we never know whether we'll have that next day. But there's another meaning that is even superimposed on that, and that is, you yourself are the Ba'olav, meaning do not withhold good from yourself. Because ultimately, although we talk about mitzvos as giving joy to Hashem, in reality, the joy Hashem has in our mitzvos is the joy that he has when we achieve a perfection within ourselves. Meaning, the only person who really benefits, the only entity that truly benefits from mitzvos are the person himself. That is what Chazal say. Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a very famous Gemara in Makkos, Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos Es Yisrael. Hashem wanted to give merit to the Jews. L'fikach Hirbo Lahem Torah U'Mitzvos. That's why Hashem gave us so much Torah and so much mitzvahs. And that's what we say. Hashem Chafetz, you understand how the question is. Hashem Chafetz, Hashem desires, L'man Sidko. So the English translates it because of his righteousness. The Gemara is giving you a different translation. L'man sidko, in order for him to make us righteous. And that is why Yagdil Torah, he made the Torah so big, the Yadir and mighty. And that's what the Medrash says. Hashem doesn't. Does Hashem care intrinsically whether you shecht from the front of the neck or the back of the neck? Hashem really doesn't really care about that. But this is a mechanism that gives us a tikkun of our neshamas. Hashem's nachas is our growth, our satisfaction, our joy, our kesher to him. So consequently, when the pasuk says, do not withhold good from the rightful owner of that good, the rightful owner of that good can actually be you. Don't deprive yourself. Don't hurt yourself. It's an amazing idea. We think that living a life of Torah means, okay, I'm going to sacrifice, I'm going to give up everything for Hashem. But that's not really the attitude. The attitude is you're not giving up. The attitude is you're getting. They have a mice, it's a cute mice. I think I mentioned this before because it really is a cute story about a bachur in Panovich was engaged and he wanted to bring his kala to meet Rav Shach. Or he was going to get engaged. So the girl comes into Rav Shach and she says, she wants a person who's going to stay in learning, and she says she will make every sacrifice, she will undergo every deprivation, she will, no matter what it takes, no matter how much suffering it will be, she will create, she will give up everything for Torah. So after she left, Rosh Hashanah told the person, drop her like a hot potato, break the engagement. I don't know if it was an engagement or not, but says she's not the right person for you. What's the pshat? Because if the attitude is, I will suffer the shame shamayim, that's not going to last. That's not going to last. No, there's only a certain amount of time we can put our arm in a hot fire, you know, and not draw it away. The attitude has to be not that I will suffer for Hashem no matter what it takes. The attitude is, I'm not suffering. The attitude is, this is joyous, this is happy, this is nachas, right? So Rosh Hashanah says, if a woman is saying, I'm willing to be the ultimate sacrificer, he says, that gufa is a chisarit in her approach to Torah. And again, psychologically, it's very true, because most, I mean, again, I'm not saying it's impossible, but very few people are able to consistently be miserable at what they're doing and keep on doing it. Now, it's true that somebody once went to the Chafetz Chaim and said, I don't get geschmack in my learning. So the Chafetz Chaim says, learn without geschmack, okay? I mean, it's true that we can't expect, realistically, that all the time I'm going to get great joy. But unfortunately, if a person doesn't get any sipuk at all from it, it is very, very hard. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's very hard to get right. So consequently, a person has to try to orient himself to see the joy in learning, to see the joy, not just learning, in Avodas Hashem generally, and the like. And that is what this pasuk is teaching us, according to that other meaning. Don't withhold good from you. This is good for you. It's not just good for Hashem. In a sense, it's not good for Hashem. Hashem's joy is only because we're becoming closer to Hashem. We're perfecting our neshama. Okay? And the second pasuk makes the same point, but it switches the metaphor that instead of referring to Hashem, like one pshat, as the Ba'alim, as the master, it calls Hashem Reyacha, your friend. And although, in a sense, the second pasuk is making the same idea, but it's developing the fact that our relationship to Hashem exists in multiple ways. Right? This is an amazing thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was infinite. And because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was infinite, every aspect that can exist in human relationships is reflected in the relationship Hashem has with us. So in human relationships, we have one type of love, which is a husband to a wife, or wife to a husband. And then there's the love of a parent to a child to a parent. And then there's the love of friends. And then there's the relationship of masters to servants and kings to subjects. Right? These are discrete relationships. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu encapsulates the totality of all of those relationships. So Hashem is both our husband, and Hashem is our parent, and Hashem is our master, and Hashem is our king. And strangely enough, there are even midrashim, and this is very hard to understand, that invert the relationship. Hashem is our child, Hashem is our servant. Those are much more difficult to understand. But in some ways, by the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a situation where he gets nachas based on what we do, in a sense, he made himself dependent on us, as he made, by an act of his will. I mentioned again. Forgive me for repeating, but I think I mentioned the Avudram, the very important Avudram, Rav David Avudraham. And if you're not familiar with the name, you should be familiar with him. He was a late Rishon who lived in Spain. Rav David Avudraham. They already had last names by then, like Rav Yosef Karo. And the Avudram's specialty, what he wrote on, was he wrote on Tefillah and the Jewish calendar. That's one of the Sifrei Yesod on Tefillah, and also the Cheshbon of the Moados, and explaining the calendar. The Avudram is one of the important Svarim. And he's very well regarded because the Beis Yosef quotes the Avudram quite a lot. So it's considered to be an authoritative sefer. It's available. And he's called the Avudram, and he explains by a bracha, very, very interesting idea, again, forgive me for repeating it, that is, every bracha switches its grammatical usage, because it starts off with atah, you're talking to Hashem directly, and then it moves into the third person. So, bracha atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Olam, shakol niya bidvaro. Now, in some brachas, you can't really tell. For example, Hamotzi, it's a little ambiguous. Baruch atah Hashem Hamotzi. I mean, technically, you can use the word Hamotzi even on a second person. So you don't automatically see the shift. Although the correct translation is a shift there too. Blessed art you, God, He who takes the bread out of the earth. Although you wouldn't automatically know that. But in a bracha like Shahakol, you see it very, very explicitly. Because you say, Shahakol niya bidvaro, everything came into existence by His word. Grammatically, it should say, Shahakol niya bidvarecha. Everything came into existence by your word. Right? So it's a question. Why does the bracha switch? So the Avudram says that this expresses our true relationships to Hashem. Atah, the second person, is the direct relationship of love. You know, we're right close to Hashem. The closeness that a person has to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you and cares about you. He's your friend, as it were, or a parent. So that is expressed in the second person of Atah. But then, and that's the relationship of Avas Hashem. But then, you have to also recognize Hashem's infinite power and greatness, that He's beyond us, that as close as we think we are, we don't really, really, really connect to His essence. And that is reflected by the third person, which in Hebrew diktuk is called Nistar, the hidden one. The second person is called Nochach, direct, and the third person is called Nistor. And that exemplifies the relationship of Yira. Yira does not mean to be scared, although there's a component of that too, but Yira primarily means awe, reverence, being overwhelmed with the greatness of the Almighty. And therefore, in every bracha, you are kolel, the aspect of Ava and the aspect of Yira. And to use fancy terms, Ava is described as the immanence of Hashem. Immanence means that Hashem is right with me. And Yira is described as transcendence, that Hashem is above me, Hashem is beyond me. In many ways, and you have to have both. You have to have Ava Hashem and Yira Hashem. You know, there's a famous Ramban on the Torah. Everybody knows the halacha in the Gemara called Asei Docha Lo Sasa. This is a very important klal. In Shas, so Shas Klal, that when you have a positive commandment, and the only way you can fulfill the positive, and this is important, the only way you can fulfill the positive is by transgressing a negative commandment. So we are given a direction that in such a situation, the negative is set aside by the positive. Now, there are many, many conditions and limitations on this. And again, although this is not the time for a pilpul on this, I just want to point out that at first glance, we have two halakhic rules that seem to be contradictions. On one hand, we're told, I can violate a negative to do a positive. That's called esse doche lo sase. On the other hand, we have another rule that's called mitzvah haba be'aveira, that if I do a mitzvah, positive mitzvah usually, by committing an aveira, not only do I have an aveira, that's for sure, but since I accomplished the mitzvah by doing an aveira, I don't even, so really I'm double. In other words, I get a zero on the mitzvah and I get a demerit on the aveira. So l'chaira, you would think, this is like matter and antimatter, right, in physics. There seems to be a collision course of contradiction. On one hand, you tell me a rule, the positive overrides the negative. Then you tell me there's another rule that says if I commit a positive by committing a sin, which is a negative, I don't get the mitzvah at all. But the short answer is the way you would map this out is the following. You first ask yourself if the positive overrides the negative under those rules of esse docha lo sase. If the answer is yes, then it's not a mitzvah that you're committing through a sin, because the principle of esse docha lo sase says there's no sin. It is only when you conclude that you don't have the heter of esse docha lo sase that if you went ahead and did it anyway, you would then bump into the second klal of mitzvah babi avera. So this is an important sequence. In other words, it's very important that you apply these rules in the right order. That when you have a conflict between a positive and a negative, don't first apply mitzvah babi avera. Because if you do, your answer will always be, you're not yotze. The first thing you have to apply is this a scenario where the positive overrides the negative? If yes, then do not proceed to mitzvah babi aveira, because it's no longer an aveira. If no, then you go into mitzvah babi aveira. Okay? And again, there are many, many rules. I don't want to get into all of the rules, but I just want to explain, again, the most common example that Bisman has said for Essay Docholos is a gris mila, although that has its own pasuk, but essentially it's illustrative of the principle. If a baby is born on Shabbos, right, so the bris is going to be, if it's Bismano, it's going to be on Shabbos. So even though a bris can involve many malachas, causing bleeding, etc., whatever the malachas are, under those circumstances, since the only way you can fulfill the mitzvah of the eighth day is by violating Shabbos, the mitzvah of bris is doche the losasa of Shabbos. Right? That's an example of essay doche losasa. Now, let me use bris to illustrate two limitations on essay doche losasa, the two cases where you don't say it. Scenario number one is, what if the baby is born on middle of the week, but you couldn't do the bris on the eighth day, so you want to do the bris on Shabbos, which is the 9th, 10th, 11th, 13th, 14th day, whatever it is. So can you do a mila shelo bismana on Shabbos? The answer is no. Why is that? Because when can you transgress a negative and do a positive? Only if there's no other way to do the positive. But here, you do have another way to do the positive. Do the bris later. Now, when it's the eighth day, there's a special mitzvah of doing it the eighth day. There's no way I can do the mitzvah of the eighth day except on Shabbos, so the essay is doche. But there's no mitzvah of doing a bris on the ninth as opposed to the tenth. There's, you know, there's a general rule. You try to do a mitzvah as early as possible. But the mitzvah on the day nine is the same as the mitzvah on day ten. So vis-a-vis essay doche lo sasa, this is called efshar l'kayim shneim. You could do both. So you got to push it off. Right, so that's one example of where you don't say essay doche lo sasa. And therefore, if a person did a bris on Shabbos, it would be called a mitzvah bo bi'aver. Now, what that means by bris mila is an interesting question. It doesn't mean the kid's an aro. In other words, it means that the father does not have schar for the mitzvah of circumcising his son, but that would not invalidate the bris per se. It's just he's not yotzei the mitzvah. Now, another example which illustrates the limitations in essay doche lo sasa can even occur on a Shabbos bris. Let's say it's Shabbos. Baby was born on Shabbos. Eighth day is Shabbos. So the question becomes, can a mohel drive to do the bris on Shabbos? The chayra, if he's allowed to do the bris, which is a molacha, then let him drive, which is a molacha. So this illustrates another principle, that the only time I say essay doche lo sasa is if at the time I'm doing the aveira, I am fulfilling the mitzvah. I can't do an aveira now to do a mitzvah later. That's called biidna. That is the problem of the stolen lulav. You can't steal a lulav to be yotze, even if that's the only lulav that's available, because you're stealing it and then being yotze with it, right? So that's sort of in the, yeah.
Yeah, but the
moel
takes all the muksa subjects for the
race. Yeah, that's true. But muksa, that's very true. But muksa is an issue to rabbanan, so that's a separate set of categories. But the moel can certainly not transgress a malacha d'oraisa before the bris in order to do the bris. Now, there is a man d'amar in the Gemara that's cholik, Rabbi Eliezer said. Rabbi Eliezer says the following, such an unusual scenario. He says, you're even allowed to cut trees down on Shabbos, make a bonfire, smelt metal to fashion the knife, to be able to do the bris. Rabbi Eliezer permits like everything, going all the way back to the beginning. But the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. Okay, again, I don't want to get into so much pilpul there, but the one I wanted to share with you was the Ramban. The Ramban says a beautiful idea. L'chaira, why should a positive be more important than a negative? You know, if anything, if you have a conflict between two mitzvahs, the directive should be, don't do anything. Right? In other words, if my choice is, do a bris and desecrate Shabbos, or don't do a bris, and don't desecrate Shabbos, then I would simply say, I'm kind of paralyzed here, because whatever I do, I'm going to make a mistake, so I don't do anything. And yet, the Torah says, the positive overrides the negative. Why is that so? So Ramban says, very beautifully, he says, that mitzvos asay are expressive of a love relationship, because when you love somebody, you want to do things for them. Mitzvos laisasa, don't touch the thermostat or whatever it is. Right? That kind of comes from yira. And since ava is a greater madrega than yira, it's a deeper madrega than yira, so therefore ava overrides yira when it comes in conflict. That's what the Ramban says. Now, of course, you have to understand that, because although it is 100% the case that love is a greater madrega, that's what Rashi says in Kriya Shema, the ahavta es Hashem alekecha, you shall love Hashem. So Rashi says, love, serve Him out of love and not just out of fear. But you have to understand that love is a higher madrega, but it is tantamount to a second story or a tenth story, meaning to say, a tenth story can have a kiyum only if it's resting on lower stories, meaning you cannot jump to Ava without a foundation of Yira. So Yira Sashem, as the book of Mishlei says many, many times, Yira Sashem is the beginning of wisdom. Yira Sashem is the foundation, right? So you don't sit back and poo-poo, Yira, that's the Roma Drago, I want Ava Sashem. Ava Sashem has to be built on Yira Sashem. And in fact, there's actually a logical reason for that. And that is, if you love Hashem without being filled with awe and reverence, then you're not loving Hashem, you're loving something else, because you don't know what Hashem is. In other words, it's like you can't love somebody without knowing, we never really totally know, without really knowing who they are, otherwise you're not loving them. So unless you are overwhelmed with Hashem's grandeur and Hashem's might and Hashem's power, if you haven't internalized that, then whoever it is you're loving is not Hashem. See, so Yiras Hashem is what enables us, Lefi Ar Madrega, to understand who Hashem is. And then I could be filled with love for all that Hashem does, right? So in a sense, it's not just a general rule, although that's also true, that you can't reach the higher Madrega till you have the lower Madrega. That's a general rule in Ruchnius. That applies across the board. But there's a specifically logical reason why Avas Hashem has to be based on the foundation of Yiras Hashem, because it's Yiras Hashem that is essentially the awareness of what Hashem is. Otherwise, it's like somebody once said to an atheist once said to a rabbi, I don't believe in God. So the rabbi responded, I don't believe in the same God that you don't believe, or equal. Meaning to say, yeah, your understanding of God that you don't believe in says, I also don't believe in that God. Because my understanding of Hashem is a different understanding. You see? So until we have, of course we can't really talk about understanding Hashem, but Lefi Ar Madrega, we understand the idea of the infinite power and everything else. So why did I have this very long digression? Simply to talk about the fact that in Pasuk Chavches, where again, don't tell your friend, come back later. Again, it's a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also our friend. An amazing idea. Our king, our master, our lover, our father, our friend. Even the idea of friendship is picked up in this. The thing that on Yom Kippur, before the Vidui, we have a little piyut that we sing. So that's actually a very moving encapsulation of all of these different types of titles. And it mentions, you are our friend. That's not a small thing. You think, gee, Hashem is king. This and that. He's our friend. Like that deserves something up there too. He says, yeah, friendship is not a small thing. And when a person is lonely and feels forsaken and feels abandoned in life sometimes, know that you have a good friend, a friend that that cares about you, and a friend that has the power to help you in any possible way that you might possibly ever need. And therefore a Yid can never feel alone. A Yid can never feel afraid, because he always has a friend that is on his side. So that's not a Kleinigkeit. I think I would mention, again, forgive me, I'm probably repeating things, but that's what Rashi says. When I talk about Shal Chedus, I said it's some cipher, but when the guy asks Hillel, teach me the whole Torah on one foot. So Shammai chased the person away, and Hillel said, oh, I'll give you an answer. Madasani lach, what is hateful for you, lachavracha vaisiyavu, do not do to your friend. Don't do to your friend things that are hurtful to you. The Idach, the rest of the Torah, you can go learn it now. So the question people ask is, L'chaira, Hillel's answer, there are really two kashas, really. Number one, why does Hillel use a negative? Hillel says, you know, Christians actually use this as a debating point, because the Christians like to point out that when Yashka was asked, what is the foundation of the Torah? So Yashka said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Yashka talked about, obviously you know how absurd this answer is, because but love your neighbor as you love yourself. But Hillel, who was a contemporary of Yashka, just said the negative, don't hurt people. So Christians like to make the point that Yashka stressed the ethic of actually loving people, as if, you know, they've done that, but as opposed to Hillel, just says, don't hurt people. Somebody starving in the street, as long as I didn't push him down, it's fine. Now, that's totally absurd, and the reason it's absurd is that, yes, I'm not going to take away the fact that Yashka did say, V'hapkil recha kamocha, he did say it, but he was quoting a pasuk in our Torah. So it is a good kasha, right? So to say that Yashka invented the notion of positive love and Hillel was only a negative person is obviously a steer, because Avdol Yechad Kamocha is befeirish in the Torah. But that does give rise to an interesting question. So Eibazai, why does Hillel use the negative? Why does Hillel say to the guy, what you don't want people do to you, you know, to you, don't do to them? He should have said, love them. So on that already, we saw Salanter gives an important answer, and this goes back to what I just said, that in Ruchnius, you got to start off with not hurting. Before you think you can love people, learn how not to hurt them. Meaning, sometimes we want to shower people with love based on what we think is good for them, but we never really get to know them. We look at them as notches on our belt, mitzvos of chesed. Let me give you a trivial example, because I'm just a little familiar with it. You know, when people are sick, people are ill. So we have Bikur Cholam organizations, wonderful, wonderful Bikur Cholam organizations. But you know, when people are ill, I'm not necessarily talking about serious things. Let's say someone has a flu and they're bedridden for 2 weeks. People respond to illness in different ways. Some people like to be alone. Some people like to have company. Some people like for people to make food for them. And some people actually don't like people to make food for them. So let's say my thing is I like to make chicken soup for sick people. And I show up to your house with, you know, a gallon, you know, a huge, huge cauldron of chicken soup. And, you know, you don't like chicken soup, but you actually say, you're honest enough to say, well, I really don't like chicken soup. And I say, I spent 5 hours, you know, making this. Take this soup and eat it. Yeah. So that's an example where, you know, you think you're showing love, you're showing chesed, but you never really got to know what the person needs. So Hillel's words are very wise. Hillel is saying, you wouldn't want people to do things to you that affronted your dignity and took away your choices in life. So before you start loving people, be sure you're not doing something that's hurting them at the same time. So it's not so simple that the negative is a lower madrega. The negative basically means don't start using people for your own olam haba. You know, this is a problem also in the kirov room. You know, there was once an advertisement for tzedakah. Somebody told me the Beis Levi actually says this is a good thing, so I don't want to criticize it, but it rubbed me the wrong way, and I think the Alter Slobodka would have said it was a chisarin. It says, when you give tzedakah, you know, to this ani, it is like your lulav and your esrog and your pail of tefillin. They were trying to say that this is a chepta of mitzvah. So there's a problem with that. The problem with that is that you're essentially using other people to get you olam haba. When that's not what the Torah means by chesed. The Torah means by chesed that you should care about them. In fact, That might be the explanation why in mitzvahs bein adam lechaveira you don't make a bracha. Why don't you make a bracha before you give tzedakah? Again, this is a many answers to that. The answer is because what does a bracha say? Asher kivishanu b'mitzvosav, I am doing this because you, Hashem, have commanded me. So imagine, I'm looking at the Yoni and I'm saying, I am caring about you only because Hashem made me do it. It's lehepech. The author of Slobodka says, I'm supposed to care about you. For me to make a bracha, I'm doing it because Hashem commanded me. It's for care from the attitude of rachamim that Hashem wants you to have. This is the author of Slobodka says. So according to him, at least, he would say, it's not right to say, you are my ticket to Olam Haba. Right? You have to, right? So that's what Hillel is saying. Before you start loving people, be sure that you know who they are. You respect their dignity. You're machshav them as a people, as a person. You don't just use them as a ticket. What do they tell the story? They tell the story about, this is Le'inyan, but it's such a cute story. I have to share it with you. About a guy that read in a sefer, it's crazy things people read, that if you have a bad argumentative wife and you suffer with it, you're guaranteed Olam Haba. So he goes to his Rosh Hashiva and he says, I want a shidduch with the worst woman you could find. I want the worst. So she says, you crazy? He says, I insist. So they looked far and wide, and they found a woman like bad nidos, and she yells and screams and gets mad and gets temper, and you know, doesn't want to do chesed for anybody. Really awful, awful person. And you know, obviously nobody was going to marry her. He says, I will take her. So they get married. And there's like an immediate change. She serves him breakfast in bed, and she, you know, she's mechazik him in his learning, and she makes Shabbos meals and achnosas orchim. And no matter what happens, she's like so gentle and nice and kind, and doesn't speak lashon hara and never, you know, like she's a real tzaddikus. So the chassan is very perturbed. He's very disturbed. He says, you know, this is not the deal. So he goes to his wife and said, you know, I married you because you were a certain way, and you're not that way anymore. So she says to him, if you think you're going to go to Olam Haba because of me, you got another thing. So it's a cute story, but you know, so that's an example where, you know, she was doing chesed, but Davka to be machshel him, you know. So he wouldn't get any benefits. He wouldn't get any benefits from it. Okay. But I brought this for a second. So one part of Hillel is, why does Hillel make the negative? So Rabbi Zal Salanter says, that's to teach an important idea, that before you start doing chesed, be sure you're not hurting the person in the chesed that you're doing. Okay. But the second point, which ties in directly to our pasuk here, is, v'chayra, Hillel's answer is not complete. Hillel says, don't hurt your friends. So maybe that describes Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Don't revenge, you know, give tzedakah. But how does that pick up tefillin, talis, shatnas? So the emphasis is, Rashi gives us the terrors. That's Rashi. You don't have to look at other mefarshim. Rashi says, when Hillel says, Chavercha, your friend, he includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also your friend, quoting a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, Reyacha v'Reya Avicha, he is your friend and the friend of your father. Therefore, when Hillel says, what you wouldn't want someone to do to you, don't do to your chaver, it is not only a human chaver, but it's also HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is we see in the pasuk in Mishlei as well, do not tell your friend, come back tomorrow, I'll pay you later. Okay, so Rashi gives a beautiful pshat, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is called your Reya. Now it's interesting, you'll notice, however, that the lashon of friend that is used in Mishlei and also in that pasuk in Divrei Hayamim is Reyacha. And of course, in the famous pasuk, V'ahavta l'Reyacha kamocha. And yet we know that another word for friend is Chaver. What is the difference in Chaver and Reya? That's why the translation, by the way, the standard translation of it in English, love your neighbor as you love yourself, seems to be an inaccurate translation. We have a word for neighbor, that is shochen. Shochen is a neighbor. Reya is a friend. So really, it's love your friend as you love yourself. But the question becomes, what is the difference in Reya and Chaver? So there's a sefer, and again, this is not a well-known sefer. Rav Schiller likes the sefer, so he's one of the relatively few people that is familiar with the sefer. This is called Haksava HaKabbalah. Haksava HaKabbalah is a sefer that was written in the 19th century. You know, I often say as a joke, well, maybe Zemes, that the Reform movement, which started in the 19th century, does have a certain zechus in Shemayim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu maybe will reward them for, because they were the gairim for four or five amazing Perushim ala Torah that were written to refute the Reform movement. So in a sense, that's why in the 19th century there was a real explosion of great, great Mefarshim on the Chumash. I include, for example, or the early 20th century, the Meshech Chachma, the Or Sameach, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, the Malbim explicitly wrote his sefer on all of Nach to combat the Reform movement. The Malbim clearly that, as did Rav Hirsch. The Nitzev, the HaMikdavar, 19th century, had a whole bunch of these great, great Mefarshim, and a lot of it was to establish the veracity of Chazal against the attacks of the Reform movement that said the rabbis are just making up interpretations that have no support in the puzzle. It's like, if you look at the Malbim, right? The Malbim tries always to show how Chazal's interpretations fit a true grammatical understanding of the pasuk. The Meshech Chachma tries the same thing, and the like. So one of the svarim of that genre, which is a very, very chashuv sefer, but not widely learned today, was a sefer Haksava Kabbalah. So Kabbalah here doesn't mean mysticism, it means Masorah, Torah Shebal Peh. Ksav, Torah Shebichsav, and Kabbalah is Torah Shebal Peh. And this was written by Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Kivager. So he was a great Talmud Chacham in his own right. And this is a sefer that's designed to integrate the Torah Shebal Peh into the language of the Torah Shebichsav. And one of his great strengths, among many, many milas, is he's very big on distinguishing synonyms and offering different translations of things. So he's masbir, what is a nafkamina between reya and chaver? So he says, the shorish of chaver is lechaber. Lechaber is to unite, to put together. So a chaver is somebody who thinks like me, someone who is connected to me, because we look at the world in the same way. A chaver is a friendship based on similarity. So the Torah doesn't have to say, love your chaver as you love yourself. I'll certainly love the person who agrees with me. Everything I say is exactly, you know, right, etc. Now, reya is from a different shorish. It's interesting that reya, which means friendship, you know, two of the letters are the same as Ra, which is pretty bad, you know, bad, evil. And Liro'eya is a shorish that means to break up. So Ra is evil because it breaks up the order of the universe. A Teru'a is a broken sound. Teru'a, it comes from Liro'eya, just like Shvarim is broken, but Teru'a is even more broken, chopped up. So Re'ya, the Ksava Kabbalah says, is a person who actually is separated from me. He sees the world in different ways. And the Torah says, love the person who sees the world differently than you and make him your friend. That is why husband and wife, in the Sheva Brachas, right, sixth bracha, Sameach Tesamach Re'im Ho'ahuvim, rejoice, beloved Re'im. Why are husband and wife called Re'im? They're not called Chavirim. Because Chavirim would mean they look at the world the same way. Men and women do not and are not supposed to look at the world in the same way. It's Bedav, you know, there's a book, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, etc. The concept is that it's specifically the fact that women see things in different ways, and men see things in different ways, that when they come together, they can achieve a shleimus. If you were to marry your clone, a separate sex clone is not possible, but if you were to marry your clone, where would you go? Where would you go with just doubling yourself? I mean, you wouldn't go anywhere, because you'd be exactly where you are. It's precisely the fact that each one looks at the world differently that pushes them forward. So Avram's chesed needed to be counterbalanced by Sarah's gevurah. And Yitzhak's gevurah needed Rivka's chesed. And of course, Yaakov's multiple wives is a whole other cheshbon exactly what that was. But that is the idea of Reim Ahuvim. And this is what Chazal say. You know, it says, Ezer Kenegdei. A wife is an Ezer, a helpmate, to be opposite. So the Gemara asks the Kasha, helpmate or opposition? Which is it? So the Gemara's answer is pragmatic. If you're Zeicha, you get a helpmate. If you're not Zeicha, you get a Kenegdei. Some people, in other words, it's or. Some people get one, some people get the other. But the Sfas Emes, in the Chassidish Sforim, they say a different thought. They say the thought that the Ezer in a marriage is the Kenegdei. The Ezer in the marriage is the fact that the other side sees things in a different way. That is true friendship. That is the friendship of Reus. Reus is the idea of being challenged. And that's why Hashem is not called our Chaver. Hashem is called our Reya, because He too challenges us. The friendship with Hashem doesn't simply accept everything we do, but it tries to raise us by making us become different, right? So that's why it makes sense that Reya is the language that is used in terms of that friendship. The Gemara says it by Taira too. What does the Gemara say by Rav Yechanan, right? Rav Yechanan's great Talmud Chaver, really, was Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, right? That's throughout Shas, Rav Yechanan and Resh Lakish. Resh is just Rav Shimon ben Lakish. And you know the story, of course, the story of the Metzia, the seventh parak. Resh Lakish was a bandit, and he actually accosted Rav Yochanan, and he was going to kill Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan convinced him that if you learn Torah, you can marry my sister, etc. And Resh Lakish became a great, one of the Gedolei Hador, one of the great Talmidei Chachamim, because of that encounter with Rav Yochanan. And it mentions that every time Rav Yochanan would say something, Resh Lakish would ask him 24 kashas. And Rav Yochanan had to either answer or be chozer, or whatever it was. And Resh Lakish died. That itself is a whole strange story, right? Resh Lakish died. And they replaced Resh Lakish with Rav Kahana, who was also like the senior Talmud of Rav Yochanan. And every time Rav Yochanan would say something, Rav Kahana would give him 24 rayos that he was right. So Rav Yochanan started crying. He said, "Where is Bar Lakisha? Where is Bar Lakisha?" So the Talmidim said, Rebbe, what do you mean? Resh Lakish was always giving you trouble and questions and arguments. Here you have somebody, everything you say, he has 24 proofs that you're right. So Resh Lakish, so Rav Yochanan said, that was the point. I didn't need somebody to tell me I was right. If I didn't think I was right, I wouldn't have said what I said. So there was nothing gained here. But when Resh Lakish would question and ask stiras, then one of two things happened. Either by looking at all of these kashas, we were able to come to a yeshiv, a resolution of understanding things beyond what we thought. Or, if we were wrong, we were chozer, and we came to a higher emes. So what do you see from there? You see that the emes comes. I mean, that's been the whole derech of Shach Matari and Gemara anyway. The whole idea of emes comes from kashas, right? So chavrusas are supposed to challenge each other and the like, you know? So that's the idea of Reya. And that's why they are Reyim. Right? Chavrus is also Reyim, not Chaverim. I mean, they could be Chaverim too, generally. But in Torah, it's not a Chavrus. We call it Chavrus. It's interesting. Again, it's not. I'm not saying this is fully consistent across the board. But if you accept this chiluk between Reya and Chaver, so a Chavrus should be more in the nature of Reya, more than Chaver, and that with what each one challenges. I don't know. I know some of you heard my little Navardic of work last night about the Navardic. They were arguing, and Chavrusa finally said, "You're right." So the other Chavrusa said, "That's not enough. You can't say I'm right. You have to say the words you're wrong, because you have to learn to be moda ma'emes." And the person said, "You're right. What's the problem? What are you bothering me?" He said, No. You have to say I'm wrong." And I'm just pointing out, apropos that, it is actually hard for a human being to say, try it. It is actually easier to say, in an argument, for me to, if I'm going to lose, it's easier for me to say, you're right, than for me to say, I'm wrong. Just, I'm wrong. It's hard to say, I'm wrong, you know. Okay, but he said it was part of Tikkun HaMidos that you have to say, I am wrong. Okay, that's the right. All right. But that's, again, all of this is just a long digression, just to be masbir, the idea of chaver. Now, if you jump down a little bit, I just want to show you a very interesting machshava that the Gra has on Pasuk Lamed Gimel. And Pasuk Lamed Gimel is a general statement that says, Me'iras Hashem, the base Russia. So Me'iras Hashem is the curse of Hashem is in the house of a Russia. Now that's a very, very strong term, because what that's saying is that even if in the house of a Russia there seems to be success, there seems to be wealth, there seems to be possessions, but it's all a facade in the sense that the blessing of Hashem is not really there. And therefore, everything looks great. Now, what that exactly means in practice is hard to put our fingers on. It depends on, there are many different ways, right? Hashem is infinite, so there are many, many ways that the curse of Hashem can be in that family. It might be in terms of the inner discontents that a person has. A person can have everything and be miserable in his life. It can be in the resentments that people have against him, but whatever it is, in the house of a Rasha, there is not true bracha. Unevei tzadikim, but in the dwelling place of the truly righteous, Yivorech, Hashem blesses. Now, again, Shlomo HaMelech obviously does not mean to say that tzadikim don't suffer, but even in their suffering, they feel the kirvas elokim. So the Gra Kedarkei likes to focus on changes in language. And you'll notice here that the house of the Rasha is called a bias. Right? Me'eras Hashem, the base Rasha. And the house of the Tzaddik is called a Neve. Neve means a dwelling place. So why is there a Shinoi HaLashon between bias and Neve? Right? These are the types of questions the Gra always goes on. So the Gra says the following. The Gra says, the nafkamina between bias and neve is bias is a permanent dwelling, and a neve is a temporary way station, like a tent till you get to your permanent abode. So the nafkamina between the Rasha and the Tzaddik is what do you regard as your permanent home? The Rasha looks at Olam Hazeh as his bias. And if you look at Olam Hazeh as your bias, this is it. You will have Me'eras Hashem. But the Tzaddik looks at Olam Hazeh as an Neve, temporary. But there's a famous story of the Chafetz Chaim. Somebody once came to the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chafetz Chaim's home had basically, you know, a dirt floor, which was not, again, even in Europe, the poverty-stricken area, it was not that common. They're just dirt floor. They just had a dirt floor. There was no floor. And, you know, ramshackle tables and chairs, like no real decent furniture. So a rich man comes in and says to the Chafetz Chaim, he says, you know, I'd like to give you furniture. He says, where's your furniture? So the Chafetz Chaim asks the man, well, where's your furniture? So the man says, I don't live here, I'm just passing through. Chafetz Chaim says, same with me. He said, you don't have furniture, you don't live here, I don't live here. And my yikar bias is Olam Haba. And what do Chazal say? Chazal say that the favorites. Chazal say, this world is a prose door. This world is a hallway, kedei shetikanes latraklin, so that you enter the palace. Haskein atzmecha prose door. Prepare yourself in the hallway, right? When you're going to see the king, right? So in the hallway, you know, you look at yourself, check yourself in the mirror, whatever it is. So Olam Hazeh is the praise door by which we prepare eventually after 120 years to enter the traklin. So the Gra says, wonderful diuk, the Gra says, that is why for the Rasha, Olam Hazeh is called a bias, and for the Tzaddik, Olam Hazeh is called a Naveh. bay is a temporary dwelling, because that is how the tzaddik looks at this world, and that is why he is not so concerned with, you know, every little comfort. You know, when we're traveling, you know, we can rough it a little bit, so the tzaddik is able, to high madrega, to look at 120 years in this life. But, you know, okay, I'm roughing it a little while on the way to the eternity of Olam Haba. So that's one thing. But then the Gemara goes on and says an interesting etymology. He says that bias is actually an abbreviation that stands for the three parts of a bias. It's interesting. The beis is bias. The yud is yesod, foundation. And the suf is tikra, roof. Right? So bias spells out the components of a bias. Bias is the actual structure. Yud is yesod, the bottom. And tikra. Okay, that's a bias. That's what a bias is. Now, neve, he wants to say, this is a little, it's not so clear, but he says, neve spells out nefesh. Yes. Nefesh is the nun. The vav is ruach. Now, I'm not sure why you don't use a ratio, but apparently for the vav, for ruach, we use the second letter. So, nun is nefesh. Vav stands for ruach, using the second letter of ruach. And he stands for the last letter of the word neshama. So the first word uses the first letter, the second word uses the middle letter, and the third word uses the last letter. Now again, I don't fully understand why we construct a word that way, but that's how this is constructed. So now the Gemara has a slightly different explanation, and that is, for the Rasha, his reality is the Gashmias of a bias. The bias, the Yesod, and the Tikra. For a Tzaddik, his real dwelling place is the world of the Nefesh, three levels of the soul. The Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama. The Tzaddik lives in the world of Neshama, and the Rasha lives in the world of Gashmias. Right? So he sees in the word bias and the word Naveh, specific allusions to Gashmias and Ruchnias in that way. Now the Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, exactly what the differences are, basically it is said that the Nefesh is the spirit of Hashem that keeps me biologically alive. That's called the animal soul. The Ruach is the emotional component that allows me to feel emotions. And the Neshama is the highest level of my soul that allows me bechira to make the seichel, to understand things, and the like. Now there are two other levels of the soul. We commonly say there are three levels. In Kabbalah there's actually five levels. There is called the chaya and the yechida, but those are outside of you. It's as if within me is a nefesh, ruach, neshama, and then I am enveloped with the chaya and the yechida. So that's why you'll sometimes see Svarim talk about five levels of the neshama. Neshama is also a general word. Five levels of the soul. And then you'll see Svarim talk about three levels of the soul. But it's not really a stira. Three are internal, and two surround me as an aura, as it were. But in the word naveh, the Gra has a remez to the three levels of the soul, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama. Okay. The next pasuk is actually a very, very famous pasuk, although I don't have a particular, the Gemara doesn't say a lot on it. And that is the idea of mita keneged mita, the Gemara. The Gemara uses the saita. Im la leitzim hu yalitz, v'la navim yitein chen. So leitz, right? What is a leitz? So a leitz is a scoffer. Leitz is a cynic. Now, Leitz does not mean having a sense of humor. That's not really it. There's nothing wrong with having a sense of humor, and Chazal praise it in some ways. It says Rava used to begin every shiur with a joke, well, I'm not sure exactly. It's milsa de b'dichas, that means a light thought. You know, we're not really sure. Rabbi had a monologue like the Tonight Show or something. You know, probably it wasn't like that. But it says Rabbi would tell something funny. And then the Gemara in Chagiga says there were two people who were comedians. They would make people laugh. And they were told that you will have a share in Olam Haba because you make people laugh. So sense of humor, making a joke, telling a story, a funny story, is a mila. That's not a chisaron per se, provided, you know, it's not bittul Torah and everything else. But leitzanus is a little different. Leitzanus is a certain humor with an edge in which you try to, it makes fun of people, it undercuts things, it's a certain cynical idea that whatever anyone is doing something good, you always point out, you know, it's not really what he's doing, you know. And the Mesilas Yesharim says, Mea leitzanus, I'm sorry, leitzanus achas, deiche mea teichichas. There could be 100 musr that a person is absorbing, and one leitzanus can destroy everything. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. Over my life, I've seen it sometimes. Sometimes a certain mood of kedusha is created. You know, you're in a masiba, there's a talk, let's say, and people are very, very nisragesh, very, very moved. And then somebody makes a joke exactly at that moment. And that changes the whole mood. So a joke might be totally appropriate at certain times. Other times, you know, it turns into a leitzanus that undermines everything. So leitzanus is a very destructive when it turns into something that undermines kedusha. Right? So everything is a joke. Nothing is serious. Nothing matters. Nothing is real. Everybody's a faker. Right? People say it about the rabbis, about Rosh Hashivas, about Gedolim, about Yidden who are trying to improve themselves and grow in Torah and Mitzvahs. But the cynic dismisses it. The cynic says that. It's nothing. So leitzanus is a bad thing. Now they do say sometimes it can be carried to an extreme. They say it's like Rabbi Akiva Eger. I say, just show you how strict Rabbi Akiva Eger was. Rabbi Akiva Eger was, as we know, not only an unbelievable gadol that's not the P.R. Madrega in any way, but he's also a phenomenal tzaddik, Yiras Hashem, and the like. So they say the story that when Rav Shlomo Eger, who was also a great Talmud Chacham, a great gadol, Rav Shlomo was Rabbi Akiva Eger's son, when he was engaged, so at the L'chaim, at the Tanaim, whatever they had in those days, so Rabbi Akiva Eger went over to the Mechutin and said, I hope my son finds favor in your eyes. So the Mechutin, I don't know what possessed him, the Mechutin said something like, I like him even more than the father-in-law. So Rabbi Akiva Eger, who was such a Yerushalmi, immediately felt that this person is Merames and Rabbi Akiva Eger did something wrong. So he says, please, please, that's great. He says, please, please tell me what did I do? I want to do tshuva. I want to be misakin my midas. Please tell me, what did I do? So the person was totally taken aback. He just said it as a casual remark. So he says to Rabbi Akiva Eger, he says, no, chas v'shalom, I mean, the Rebbe did nothing wrong at all. So Akiva Eger then says, so this was like Sanus. Because he broke the shidduch, they say. he broke the shidduch. Because, talk about, you know, fatal moves there. Because he felt that a person makes a joke like that. So Akiva Eger took late Sanus quite seriously in that way. But late Sanus is a very, very destructive meat. Again, I want to be sure that you understand. This is not saying being humorless, but it should not be humor that denigrates Kedusha and that takes away from the significance of people who are trying to be Obeid Hashem and the like. So what this pasuk is telling me is, of course, the Gemara in Sita says that this is an exemplar of the very, very famous idea of Mida Keneged Mida, that basically says Hashem relates to me the way I behave. So if I behave with an idea of leitzanus, I have fun at people's expense, then kavyachol Hashem is going to relate to me with the union of leitzanus. Things will happen to me that seem to be almost as if Hashem is having fun at my expense. It's hard for us to understand what that means exactly. But the notion is things will happen to a person that will just seem to represent Hashem having Leitzanus. And Hashem's Leitzanus can hurt a little more than our Leitzanus, as it were. Now the other way around, a Navin, a person that is humble, a person who does not disparage others. Now it's interesting, you wouldn't automatically, obviously the psukim here, right, are usually structured as opposites. We talk about the curse of Hashem in the house of Arusha, and a blessing in the dwelling place of the righteous, right? Opposite. So, based on that structure, to Leitzim, Hashem gives Leitzanus. And to Anovim, He shows Chaim. So the structure of the pasuk would seem to indicate that Leitz and Anova are opposites. Now you wouldn't automatically say that. You wouldn't know, well, Leitz is a cynic, and Anov is a modest, humble person. And you wouldn't automatically see it as direct opposites. And yet the pasuk is telling you they are opposite, because that would suggest that Leitzanus ultimately comes from gaiva. The gaiva of hating anybody who seems to be doing something better than me. If I see somebody steiging, I see somebody learning, I see somebody growing, I need to cut them down. I need to bring them down to my level. That comes from a sense of gaiva. It is the gaiva in a person that has such a desire to be cynical about people who are striving and people who are working. And therefore, the pasuk is telling me, the opposite of the leitz is the anav. And if the leitz receives Hashem's disdain, the anav is going to receive chen. Chen means grace from Hashem, a generosity. Again, this doesn't mean anav are going to be rich. It doesn't mean that at all. But it means the anav will feel, right, that he's not the victim of Hashem's capriciously doing leitzanus, but he's going to feel that Hashem is taking care of him.
Isn't that jealousy?
It is jealousy, but it manifests itself in being cynical and in cutting people down. Right? It's a manifestation of jealousy, but jealousy might be the midah at the core of this, but the particular expression is leitzanus. And that comes from gaiva, from arrogance. I just cannot stand that somebody is doing better than me in some way. Of course, this goes back to Cain and Heva. Cain didn't necessarily show leitzanus, but Cain felt very bad because Hevel's korban was accepted. And what did Hashem tell him basically? Hashem basically told him, im seitiv, if you want to improve, seis, you can carry this. In other words, you have the koach to do whatever you need to do. Didn't hear you.
What's the word in doing?
Which word?
The in.
Oh, meaning it's referring to this. If you're going to be a late, this is what Hashem, and as I'm telling you, in other words, Hashem is basically saying that if a person is a late, then Hashem will show him late sonus. In other words, I think the in is highlighting that we're not so much referring to two different people. We are referring to a single person who can choose to be this or this. If you choose this, this is what you'll get, and if you choose that, that is what you will get.
Can we act the same towards people?
Say again?
Can we act the same as Hashem?
That's hard to say, you know, because there's the question basically is, can I behave to people the way they behave to me if they behave badly to me? So you do have a problem because, you know, this is interesting because the Torah does prohibit nekama, which is revenge, and bearing grudges. So generally speaking, we kind of leave it to Hashem. We don't make our own decisions in that way. But, if you're a mechanech, if you're doing an alderich hamusar, or you're a parent, one of the permissible ways of chinuch that a rebbe or a parent can do is to give a child a taste of his medicine. But you have to do it the shem shamayim, so the child will understand. I mean, I'm going to say a child, even in an older person, will understand. But a stam friend really shouldn't do that. It should be someone that is a spiritual, a parent, a teacher, someone that has the responsibility to be mechanech the person that way. Okay. All right, so that's what I just wanted to share about Perek Gimel. Now, to move to Perek Dalet, I want to start with a very famous pasuk that we say every time we return the Torah. Again, Ki lekach tov nasati lachem. Lekach tov nasati lachem. I have given you, this is Hashem speaking, I have given you a good lekach. Lekach means a purchase, something that you buy. Torah si al ta'azevu, do not abandon my Torah. And then we have Eitz Chaim, which actually was an earlier pasuk. It's interesting, for reasons that are not entirely clear to me, in what we say in davening, we actually reverse the orders of the psukim, because Eitz Chaim hi l'machazikim ba, the Torah is a tree of life to those who hold on to it, and Yerachah Darchei Noam was actually in Perek Gimel. And Ki lekach tov nasati lechem is in Perek Dalet, and yet we put it before. But putting that aside, the Gemara in Brachos has an interesting comment on Ki lekach tov nasati lechem. And it says that the midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not like the midah of a Basar Vadan. Let's say a Basar Vadan, Gemara in Brachos, a Basar Vadan is a precious possession. Let's say I have a painting that's been in my family for 500 years. And I need the money, I have to sell it. So the derech of a Basar Vadan, when he sells something very, very precious, ha-mocher atzev, the seller is very sad. Yes, he's going to get money that he needs, but he's very sad to give up this precious painting. Ha-lokeach sameach, the lokeach is very happy, I have this painting. Ha-kadosh baruch hu ein okay. Even though he is the mocher that is selling us the Torah, he is happy. I have given you a beautiful thing. So this is Gemara in Brachos. It compares Hashem to the mocher of something very precious. So the kasha in that Gemara is an obvious kasha. Hashem sold the Torah? It's not the same thing. When I sell the painting, I don't have it anymore. Here, Hashem commanded us to keep the Torah. What did he give up? How is he the mocher of the Torah? So the great guy, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, and again, these are maybe gedolim that you haven't heard a lot about. Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector was actually the undisputed gadol hador in the late 19th century in Russia. He was the Posek Hador. He was the Gadol Hador in terms of Minyanim of Tzibor. This was the generation before Rav Chaim Poser. Again, although he may not have been regarded as the Lamdan Hador in the sense that you had Rav Chaim, you had people went to for Lamdas, but he was considered to be really the leader of Klal Yisrael. Every Jewish house in Russia had a picture of Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. Why you is named after him, whether that's a Shevach Hanan, that's another question, but Yeshiva University is called Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. Now, it's interesting, strangely enough, there's a street, there's a street in Yerushalayim, busy street, right off Jabotinsky, that's called Rehov Yitzchak Elchanan. And I thought all the years that I guess it's named after him, but I wondered, why isn't it called Harav or something? You know, apparently there's a Zionist leader who's called Yitzchak Elchanan, so it's not the same person at all. But Rav Yitzchak Elchanan was a great gadol. In fact, Rav Chaim used to ask Shilas to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. This is a very famous story, that Rav Chaim would say to him, please tell me if this is usher or mutter, but don't give me any reasons. Just yes or no. I don't want any reasons. So they say that if he would have given reasons, Rav Chaim would see holes in the lumbus and the different arguments. But Rav Chaim held that in every generation there is a person that Hashem has designated as the posek of the generation. So even if his lumbus is not right, he will come to the emes. So Rav Chaim says, I don't need to hear your lumbus, just tell me the answer. And I know that your answer is going to be the right answer. Okay. Just to know who he was. Yitzchak Elchanan was a great, great gadol, and also There are so many stories. I'll tell you a story about his midos. Once you know the midos of such a great gadol as well, that the story goes, he once gets a shaila from a kehila. And it seemed to be a relatively routine shaila. It was about a shaila, the kind of congregation. He wants to get a shaila about a mix-up in the laws of basar b'challah, meat and milk. Like, you know, you wouldn't ask Yisrael Chanan this question. And Yisrael Chanan is pondering, why are they asking me a routine shaila? So this is what he reconstructed. I know they just hired a rav, because he knew everything that was going on. They just hired a young rav. And I know there are people that are jealous of the young rav because they wanted the job. So they probably asked him a shaila and he got the answer wrong, and now they want me to give the right answer so they can use it to fire the rav. This is what he figures out. So what do I do? If I give them the right answer, they're going to fire the rav. If I give them the wrong answer, I'm not going to answer the halacha. So what do I do? So this is what he did. He wrote a letter giving the wrong answer. He then sent a telegram saying, in 2 days you're going to get a letter that I wrote in which I said something was mutter. But I really made a mistake. I made a mistake and it's really usser. And please, when you get my letter in 2 days, ignore it. You see the point of the story. The point of the story is that the first answer they get is the right halacha. But they can't possibly use it against the Rav, because Rav Yitzchak Chanan himself says, I made a mistake. Meaning it's such a hard question that I made a mistake. So he was willing. So he was willing to show his midos. He was willing to really embarrass himself by saying he made a mistake in order that another person should not be put at a disadvantage. This was the type of midos. So many stories. Say Moshe Shabbos is money, so nice him about Gedolim. It's much to do this. This was a time when Jews were drafted into the Russian army for very long periods of time, very awful. And people would go out of their way to get out of the army. Sometimes they would cut off a finger, different things to get out of the army. And when one of his Talmidim was freed, people came in to give him the news. And he was learning b'chavrus with somebody. And literally, there were 50 people who came in the course of the day to tell him. And the chavrusa was there, and the chavrusa was getting sicker. Says, Rizkul Chanan made believe it was the first time he was hearing the news, because each person wanted to have the honor of telling him about this great news. And he was not impatient. Every single time he said, oh, thank you, Baruch Hashem, thank you for telling me the news. He wanted them to feel good that they were the first ones who told them the news. These are little examples of tzaddikim who were so perfect in their midos. But the reason I'm bringing him up here is because in the Hakdama, so he wrote quite a few svarim on halacha, shailos and tshuvas that are still very, very important. In fact, one of his interesting pesukei halacha, which is again for Pesach, nothing to do with Mishli per se, is that when a rav sells chametz, let's say Rav Wein or anyone who sells chametz, right? So you go to him and you give him details, etc. Well, what if I have a show or whatever it is, and some members didn't go to me and they didn't put their names on? So Rav Yisrael Chanan has a long tshuva that you can sell chametz for somebody even without their consent, because since it is a zechus, it is a good thing that they shouldn't own chametz during Pesach. So you can be a shaliach without their consent under the principle of zachin li adam shelo b'fanav. I can confer a benefit on you without your permission. Now, if you're actually against it, I can't, but if you simply didn't do anything about it, I can confer a benefit without your permission. So Rizkul Chanan says that applies to mechiras chametz. Now, many paiskim argue, many paiskim say, they actually darshan zachin li adam. You can give somebody something, you can't take something away. And since selling chametz is taking it away from them, so b'chia gavna, you don't say z'chia. But Rizkul Chanan, I believe, is one of the paiskim matters, zachin li adam shelo b'fanav.
What's the accepted psak?
The accepted psak is that you don't rely on zachin li adam. But on the other hand, it's better than nothing. Meaning, if I really have a guy who didn't do it, I should sell the chametz, but it's a subject. The chametz might still be usher after Pesach and the like. But in the Hakdamah to one of his tshuvas, he goes on this Gemara in Brachos. And I give you these long introductions for the pasuk itself. And he says like this. He says, do you remember the Gemara in Bava Metzia, right? One of the famous Gemaras of Taner Shalachnoi. Taner Shalachnoi means the oven that is like a snake. Imagine an earthenware oven that's cut up into hula hoop strips. And then when you assemble the oven, you put mud between the strips. And then when you disassemble it, you just take away the strips and leave the mud. That's how you carry it. So there's a machlekes, is such an oven makabel tuma, or do I not treat it like a real kli because it's never really together? So it's a machlekes, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And Rabbi Eliezer said tohar, Rabbi Yeshua says tameh. And a majority of the Chachamim paskin like Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer refuses to be makabel v'psat, keneged the rabbim, and in the Gemara he calls on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do many miracles. Remember the story. He says, if the halacha is like me, mizol the Gemara of Mitzia, then let the river, let the tree fly away, the carob tree fly away. And the tree flies away, and Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't listen to trees. If the halacha is like me, let the river move in the opposite direction. And the river moves in the opposite direction. And Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't listen to rivers. If the halacha is like me, let the walls of the Beis HaMedrash collapse. And the walls were going inward. And Rabbi Yeshua said to the walls, you can't do that. And the walls were mesupik, what to do. So the Gemara says they remain slanting. An explanation for the architecture of the Beis HaMedrash. So Rabbi Eliezer says for a third time, I don't listen to walls. So finally, they get out the big guns, and they say, if the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, let there be a bas kol min hashamayim, a voice of Hashem. And a voice from Hashem says, halacha Rabbi Eliezer. And they say, we don't listen to that either. And the reason is, lo bashamayimi, the Torah is not in heaven. That sounds like a preposterous answer, and yet the Gemara says, somebody asks Eliyahu HaNavi, what did Hashem do? When they get such a chutzpahnik answer, it's none of your business, Hashem, stay out of it. As Hashem was laughing, Nitzchuni banai, my children have beaten me, I'll get out of this. So the Drasha Saran, it's a complicated mixtape. You know, Drasha Saran, this is a famous Ran on the Rif, but he wrote Drushas, also one of the great, great Svarim of Machshava, asked the question, you know, what's going on here? When we learn halacha, when we have a machlekes, what are we trying to figure out? We're trying to figure out, what does Hashem want us to do? So if Hashem tells you what he wants, you say, keep out of this, Hashem, we're going to figure this out. Now, you might argue, who says a bas kol is accurate? You know, all sorts of people get up and say, God told me this. But that's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara doesn't say it wasn't a bas kol. The Gemara doesn't say, we don't think it's Hashem talking. The Gemara seems to indicate they knew this is from Hashem. That's what they got. An akol pichin, lo b'shamayani. And it's not like it's a fake. So the Drushes Ran says, what sense does that make? So the Ran is Masbir, again, so it's a complicated mashava. But the Ran is Masbir that the emes of Torah is not like mathematical truth. In mathematical truth, let's go with standard Euclidean mathematics. In higher mathematics also there are different things. But in regular arithmetic, let's even do that. There is only one right answer. One and one, 1 + 1 = 2. If you say it's 3 or you say it's 4, you're just wrong. It's not like it's your opinion. In halacha, that's not emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us rules and procedures. And then he left it to us to figure out. The chachamim. Who are the chachamim is a question also. And even when the chachamim come to the wrong answer, based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yesodos, Hashem says, that's the answer I want. So objectively, the Baskol is actually saying, objectively, Rabbi Eliezer is right. But operationally, Hashem says, I want the halacha to be nikva based on the opinion of the Rov. Right? So we have two levels of emes. We have the objective heavenly emes, and we have the emes that Hashem wants in Olam Hazeh. In Olam Hazeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the emes that comes through the hachra of the chachamim. So even when it's wrong, it becomes right. It becomes Hashem's rasa. So Rav Yitzchak Elchanan says quite beautifully and quite logically, I asked the Kasha, he asked the Kasha, how can the Gemara in Brachos describe Torah as Hashem selling it, giving it up? He didn't give it up. He commanded us to keep it. The answer is no, not at all. He indeed gave it up. That is exactly what Lo Bashamayim he means. That Hashem says, I am giving you the control over the MS of Torah in Eilam Hazeh. Right? Mamash, Pshuto Kamashmo, that's exactly what the Gemara is saying. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Mocher, we are the Lokeach, and he is Mishabeach, as Mishabeach, Ki Lekach Tov, Nasato. Gevaldi, Gevaldi, Pshat. Now, one little side point, from the Gra, but it's not from the Gra in Mishlei, it's from the Gra in Anchumish. Of course, the Gra didn't write directly on Chumash, but the Likutim of the Gra, Kol Elio, is the most famous Likut of the Gra. And he points out maybe a side point. It's a side point, but it's an interesting point. Why does Rabbi Eliezer, look what are the three miracles Rabbi Eliezer resorted to before he used the Basco? So miracle number one was the carob tree flew away. Miracle number two was the change of the river. And miracle number three were the Kosley Beis HaMedrash collapsing. So the Gra wants to identify a specific cheshbon in why Rabbi Eliezer chooses those miracles. And he says, Rabbi Eliezer was not able to convince them that he was right. So he wants to show that because of his madrega in Torah, they should listen to him, kind of ad hominem, meaning, I'm so great, again, he's doing it the same Shemayim, I'm so great that you have to listen to me. And the miracles are an aegis from HaKadosh Baruch Hu as to the personal greatness of Rabbi Eliezer. And the Gra says, there are three madregas that a Talmud Chacham needs to be great in Torah. The first madrega is to be mistapek b'muat. Mistapek b'muat means to be happy with very little in Gashmias, meaning if you have to have the most expensive clothes and furniture and the best food, one cannot really be shakua in Torah. You have to be willing to accept a simple way of life and not seek the tanugim of Olam Hazeh. So his first taina is, I am a mistapek b'muat. Now why is that so? The charub, the carob, is the example of a food that is very simple. And the Gemara always uses it for people who live in poverty. All they do is eat charuvim, the carob. Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, the Gemara says, the whole world gets parnasa in the marriage of Rabbi Chanina ben Daisa, a great miracle worker. And Chanina ben Daisa only eats a little measure of charuvim. Me'erev Shabbos, le'erev Shabbos. So the tree is being made that Rabbi Eliezer is a mistapek b'muat. Have you ever had this, I don't know if you had it for Tu B'Shvat, this dried dried buxer, it's called buxer, but it's dried charub, dried carob. You know, it really is, it's really maybe one of the least appetizing foods that there is. And if you're eating only for survival, you'll eat it, right? But if you're eating for any other reason, no. So anyone who lives off this stuff is really only doing it for survival. He has no other kavana. Is that true?
That's why one of my teachers actually left one for a long time and ends up being sweet.
Okay. I hope so. I hope so. I mean, listen. Yeah. I mean, they flavor. They use carob to flavor things. So there must be some sweetness. Some sweetness. Okay. Now, second condition is you have to be humble. Torah is compared to water, right? Just as water goes from high ground to low ground, Torah leaves the arrogance and goes to the humble. So the water switching course is an edus on his humility. Now you might think, wait a second, that sounds a little bizarre. Rabbi Eliezer is doing a supernatural miracle to show how humble he is. He wants the whole, all of the chacham, see how humble I am. The water changed its course. I mean, this is an ostentatious, open display of how great he is. That's not humility. But the answer is, in a deeper level, it is. Because humility does not mean you're not aware of your greatness. When Moshe Rabbeinu is described in the Torah itself as the most humble of all people, did Moshe Rabbeinu go around saying, oh, I'm so stupid, oh, you know, you understand this so much better than me, you know, he goes to a five-year-old and says, could you please explain this din to me? I mean, that would not have been a mila, that would have been almost insanity, that would have been delusions. So true anava does not mean a person doesn't know who he is, but a person knows that it's a gift from Hashem, it all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it has to be used, it can't be used to denigrate people or look down at people. So you're humble in the sense that you're willing to look at people in a good way and learn from their midos, if that would be so. So Rabbi Eliezer, a modest person can, in other words, a modest person doesn't have to think of himself as a balgaiva because he's modest. In other words, he's too humble to think of himself as humble. A humble person can think, you can know, I am humble. You know, and especially when there's an inyan of L'shem Shamayim, because he's trying to convince them about a halacha in the Torah. So he says, Hashem is mayed that I'm not acting out of gaiva. I'm acting out of L'shem Shamayim. So the water is anava. Right? So the first quality is mistapek b'muat. The second quality is anava. And the third quality is hasmana. You know, you have to put in a lot of time, right? You could be modest and simple, but if you don't put in the time, one does not become. So the Kaisle Beis HaMedrash, they're essentially testifying. He was the first one in and the last one out. Hasmana. They say at the Chazon Ish Lakish, so somebody was making a whole speech how the Chazon Ish was zeicha to what he was zeicha because he learned Torah, Lishma, and the totally L'shem Shamayim, etc. So the Briskera was very upset. The Briskera says, the Chazon Ish was zeicha to what he was zeicha because he learned. The Briskera's point was this. By saying that the Chazon Ish, you know, learned with extra kavanas, you're implying, oh, the reason I'm not the Chazon Ish is because he had those extra kavanas, and I didn't. The Briskera was saying, you know, there's a simpler answer. He just learned more than you. Meaning to say, to imply, yeah, well, I learned as much as the Chazon Ish, but he had these extra kavanas. There's no, you know, we sometimes think, you know, rightfully so, that to be a gadol, you know, you need this extra thing. And that may be true, certainly, levels of kedusha. But the truth is, you can't ignore the fact that the people who become gadolim, they just learn more than the rest of us. I mean, it's, you know, even on the most basic level, they put in the time. And if you put in the time, you achieve great, great results. I mean, Hashem will give you those great results. Even without, although Derech Klal, you will get these madregas by doing this, but even without the extra madregas, the etzem learning itself, right? So Rabbi Eliezer is showing these three miracles of mistapek b'muatz, and he's showing anava, and he's showing hasmada, but he still couldn't convince them. He calls out the basko, and he still gets the answer, lo b'shamayim, that the halacha still goes like the majority. By the way, just to finish the story, it actually is a tragic story. Rabbi Eliezer refused to agree with the psak of lo b'shamayim. He disagreed with that psak, and he refused to go along with the chachamim. he was put in cheirim. He was really the gadol hadar. He was put in cheirim. He was excommunicated, and people were not allowed to learn from him anymore. And the one that was chosen to give him the news was his beloved Talmud, Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Eliezer was sick in bed. Rabbi Akiva comes into the sick room, and he stands a distance of 4 amos away, because when someone's a menuda, excommunicated, you're not supposed to be in his 4 amos. And Rabbi Eliezer looks up, and Rabbi Eliezer says, "Why are you standing so far away?" And Rabbi Akiva had to tell him, "Kimed dumav, it appears, chaveirecha bedeila mimcha." He didn't say the favorite, "You're excommunicated." He says, "Your chaveir, your colleagues, have separated themselves from you." And Rabbi Eliezer started crying. And he said, "He is like a sefer Torah that's all wrapped up, and none of the Torah in him will be able to come out." And then he said that he was mekabel from his rebbes only like a dog could lick up from the ocean. And his students have gotten from him only what a dog could lick from the ocean. There's so much ocean. So what is interesting is, again, it's a very, very tragic, powerful story. But what's interesting in the story further is that Rabban Gamliel, who was the Nazi who excommunicated him, married Rabbi Eliezer's sister. So they were brothers-in-law. So the Gemara has a mic. Oh, I'm sorry. I got it mixed up. The other way around. I'm sorry. Rabbi Eliezer's wife was Rabban Gamliel's sister. Rabbi Eliezer's wife was Rabban Gamliel's sister. So the Gemara gives a maisa. Rabbi Eliezer's wife never let Rabbi Eliezer say Tachanun after Shmona Esrei. She always interrupted him. Why didn't she let him say Tachanun? Because Tachanun is a time of tefillah where you pour out your private suffering to Hashem. So she was afraid if Rabbi Eliezer would pour out the tzara in his nefesh, Hashem would punish Rabbi Gamliel. Now again, the assumption here is not that Rabbi Gamliel would pray, I'm sorry, not that Rabbi Eliezer would pray for Rabbi Gamliel's death. He would just express his tzar, and Hashem would take in the coming. So she never let him say Tachanun. The Sheet of Mekubetzes asks the Kasha, "What do you mean? She watched him the whole day, so she interrupts him. He'll say Tachanun afterwards. What do you mean she never let him say Tachanun?" So the Sheet of Mekubetzes says, from here we learn out, that the kayach of Tachanun, that Hashem listens to your prayer, is only if you say it right after Shmon Esrei without an interruption. That's why the halacha is you're not allowed to interrupt between Shmon Esrei and Tachanun. It would seem, l'chayra, that if a person talks during Chazaras Hashatz, that's already, in other words, there can't be a non-tefillah interruption between your Shmon Esrei and Tachanun. So the chayra, you know, if you talk in Chazaras Hashatz, you already have that interruption. Okay. So the Gemara then goes on and says, one day on Rosh Chodesh you didn't have to watch him because there was no Tachanun. But one day they were ma'abra the Chodesh. She didn't realize this. She thought Rosh Chodesh was day 30, and instead Rosh Chodesh was day 31. And when she walks in on day 30, the other way around. She thought Rosh Chodesh was day 31 when it was day 30. When she walks in on day 31, she sees him saying Tachanun because she thought it was Rosh Chodesh. She wasn't watching him. And she said, "You killed my brother today." And a second later, they got word Rabbi Gamliel had just died. So it's very, very amazing. Now, this of course...
Was excommunicated, how was his wife able to have contact with him?
No, because he's alive. It doesn't apply to his wife. I mean, his wife is allowed to be with him. Now, yeah.
Did he allow his sister to marry, to be his wife, in order that she should stop him from saying Tachanun?
No, they were married before. they didn't get married after the excommunication. No, they were married before. They were married a long time. But, you know, the Gemara itself is a very interesting Gemara because you might say, well, wait a second here. If Rabbi Gamliel did the right thing, because Rabbi Eliezer refused to accept halacha, why does Rabbi Gamliel get punished for this? You see an interesting thing, which, you know, may be a little disturbing. The fact that you do the right thing doesn't mean you're totally protected. Meaning, if a Talmud Chacham suffers tzar because of a decision that you had to make, there's still going to be a kitrig of the midas hadin and shemayim, meaning there's no guarantees, you know, because you're playing with fire. And when you play with fire, even if you're rescuing a baby, you're doing the most important thing. You're playing with fire, there's going to be, right? So Rabbi Gamliel was playing with fire. Perhaps he had to do what he had to do. So there shouldn't be machlokas be Israel. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is naikin v'naikin naiter, the covenant of the Talmud Chacham. Again, this is particular nogeya, as man is at. As well, when unfortunately there is great physianess of great Talmidei Chachamim coming from different sides, and one has to be very, very careful not to get involved with those things, even if you're right. Kal v'chomer if you're not right, it's even worse. Okay, all right, we'll stop here and have a good.
When will the shiur resume?
So that's the question. The question is, well, the shiur. That's the question. I'm around basically, but a lot of the guys are not around, so I'm not sure if it's good for me to go further. So we'll resume. The Zman begins Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So when does Zman begin?
The first month shows after that. What time?
Yeah. So I would probably say 9:15 is probably. Okay. I think it's a good time. 9:15 is a good time. Yeah. So I've got to cut
you off there. Okay, so. You giving any shiurs, Rabbi, during that Zman?
I didn't decide yet. I'll probably do something. I didn't make a decision about what it would be. Maybe we'll do something. Okay. We'll get a post. If there is, I'll post it. Okay. Yeah.
What about the routine with those lessons that are Shabbos? Wouldn't you still have to eat something on Shabbos?
In other words, the question is. Yeah. The question is, did he have bread on Shabbos? He had to have bread. Bread. Ideally, fish. So, what's the idea? So, the Gemara actually says, "Asay Shabbat Chachayel b'al titzarech lebriyah." So that means treat your Shabbos like a weekday, rather than take tzedakah from other people. So maybe there's a remez that even his Suda Shabbos was charuvim, that he shouldn't be titzarech lebriyah. So now, the Gemara is an interesting maisa. The Gemara actually has a maisa that his wife once complained how poor they were, and he. He told her he could basically give her all the gold she wanted right away, but it would take away from his table in Olam Haba. So she was mekabel, right? Because he showed her a dream in Olam Haba that they were missing a gold leg on the table. On the leg. But that's a good one. Let me look into a little bit about that aspect.
Didn't Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid fast on someone, fast on Shabbos?
Because of what? Because of Asay Shabbat Chachol?
No, because I don't know why he did it, but Didn't Rabbi explain to us once that on Yom Tov you have a chiv of simcha, you have to have like wine and stuff, but on Shabbos it's whatever makes you happy. So
yeah, it does say that if a person is, if it's tired of the achila, if eating food makes him nauseous, you're allowed to fast on Shabbos because the ikur is not to have tzara on Shabbos. Right, there's no chiv to eat per se. The Torah at the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, I don't know if this is the Rehuda you're talking about, brings Rav Yehuda, the son of the Rush, who was the Torah's brother, actually talked about the fact that he has no money, he has no parnasa, you know, how should he keep Shabbos, you know, so, but there he tells him you should make something, at least something simple, to have something, but,